Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for your listening discomfort. And quite frankly, if you are getting more comfortable and you're, you know, having fun and everything listening to the show, I guess you're doing it right. If you're getting really upset and you're yelling out and you're arguing against people who are telling you things that are contrary to your current beliefs or things that you've even been brought up to believe your entire life, and even some things that contradict what your own experience tells you, instead of continuing to listen and hear them out, you'll start arguing with the radio that can't hear you, can't talk back to you, and ask it questions it won't answer. Questions which, mind you, would be answered if you simply continued to listen. Patience is what I'm looking for, ladies and gentlemen. Your patience. Thank you so much for those of you who've been listening in for years. You've been very, very patient with me as I've gone through the motions and started to become a professional talk radio douchebag. And it is absolutely humbling to have your ears pointed in this general direction. Because I've spoken to so many of you on Facebook, sometimes in person, via email, Skype messages, so on and so forth. And you're all actually pretty onto it. And none of you are doing nothing. That's the crazy part, you know. I've been having a look at the talk radio audiences of some rivals of mine and so on and so forth, and just thinking, my God, these are the most gullible, dumbass, horrifically narcissistic, horrible, abusive people that I've ever seen in my life. Like, as an audience, you know, I can see talk radio show hosts who have audiences that almost consist entirely of that. But you're not like that. And thank God for you. Could you imagine how suckful it would be if the only people that listen to talk radio are idiots? If there wasn't anybody with some intelligence, some patience, some kindness, a little bit of their own wisdom? Somebody who still has a sense of wonder in the world, somebody who knows that they don't know it all. Imagine if you didn't exist. Imagine if the people who are listening to American Freedom Radio didn't exist. Donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Donate to American Freedom Radio, because it's just the right thing to do. Not because you're just being asked to, but because you're compelled to. My very special guest joining me today is formerly of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry in Dallas. And he has been through some trials and tribulations, which I've probably personally helped out with as much as I can in my limited capacity, 10,000 kilometres away. But the thing is, when you're dealing with somebody who's a former member of an occult order that is not just a former member, but they actually actively have to endure a lot of blowback from the organizations they were formerly members of, and indeed start to become experts not in the orders they used to be a part of themselves, but into what they do to people who expose their crimes. James Robert Wright, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Vinny. That's quite the touching introduction. You know, I was stuck in that LA traffic that I video Skyped and showed you earlier, and I was thinking to myself, you know, I'm driving home to go do this show with Vinny once again, and you and I go back pretty much to, my God, the second, third show, when I was flung into the circuit, as it were. And so you've kind of watched, you know, things unfold since then. And I wish that I had, like, it's flowery things to report. I suppose on the one hand, there are good people in the world. There are good activists out there who are working tirelessly for free, you know, to give their time and energy and effort to try and as hard as they can to make this world a better place. But then again, like in your introduction, you have these very, very insidious people who, for no better explanation, just frankly subscribe to evil. There's really no other way. That's the Occam's razor of it, I suppose. And it's producing, it's like the more I keep doing this, the bigger it gets, and then the more complicated it gets as well, because it's like this never-ending chess game, and it doesn't matter what I do or where I branch out or try to go and devote whatever platform I have following me and use it for good and what have you, it always turns into some kind of raucous. And, you know, right now I'm dealing with another very challenging situation, which I'm not going to get into at the moment because it's just like any other challenging situation that arises with this sort of thing. But the thing of it is, and what it, all of these situations have in common that you also touched on in your introduction, is they all have this element of spooks, as we referred to them growing up in our household as children. That's also the British term for it, but what I mean specifically would be your Freemasons and, of course, the alphabet agencies that they are and are connected with, because let's not forget they do their recruiting from the halls of the 32nd and Templar ranks upward. So, that being said, life is very interesting here in Hollywood. It continues to be. I just, with my colleague and very good friend, Corey Muniz, shot a documentary at the Conscious Life Expo at the Hilton that occurred, what's it been now, almost a month ago now? I'm losing track of time because of the crazy drama that's been going on the side, because we shoot this documentary. I believe that everyone, I'm going to choose my words very carefully here. I believe that everyone expected us to come away from that with some sort of, let's say, I don't know, ancient aliens or the usual, you know, type of thing that you would expect to come from that environment. Instead, what we produced was all based in hard science, and it all had to do with vaccines and Fukushima. And we spoke with the tip-top primo people. We have them on camera in HD. You know, it's top-notch. And I'm dealing currently with an issue of censorship. That's the challenging situation I'm alluding to. And it's probably a good idea to not get much more into it than that at this point, because it's probably going to get, well, it's that,
as I said before, sometimes when things are really fresh, it's like, have you ever seen breaking news before? And somebody says, it's an emergency broadcast. Oh, everybody needs to pay attention to this. It's so freaking important. It's the most important show we've ever done, you know? And quite frankly, everything at the time that gets reported winds up having a hell of a lot more information dumped onto it within a week, within a month, within a year. Even more information comes out that gives you a great new perspective on things in a retrospective manner, where you get all the information, all the dirt, all the juicy nuggets, not just one incident where somebody screwed somebody over and really messed up their life and made them extremely upset and kind of derailed their life for a minute, but showing the history of somebody doing that to people again and again and again, and showing it for what it is, up for everybody to see, to expose them, to truly bring light to the cockroaches and make them scuttle away.
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. I completely agree with what you're saying. And that's, you know, a psychologist that I was once used to see when I had the extended time to see him, told me that I wear very thick armor. And my response to that was, have you ever Googled my name? You wonder why I wear thick armor? And it's only getting thicker because I keep encountering. Look, what's going on right now, I could get into the nitty-gritty details of it, but it's pointless. And I'll tell you why. Because it's just another instance of another bunch of garbage. And it's a symptom of a larger problem. And
imagine, if you will, somebody who's gone through life having virtually no problems and a great social life, and all of a sudden, every single time they get into business, boom, somebody screws them over. Every single time they get a car, boom, somebody rushes them off the road. Every single time they meet a new partner or something, boom, they get really scared and run away and they get isolated, kind of like an exile.
Yes, well, I mean, I should point out, I suppose that I have had and always probably will have supporters within that former environment I came out of. The problem, though, as it stands, is that though they may believe in what I'm doing and support me on the side, it's on the side. And they're certainly not, they don't feel that they are in a position to do anything about it. In other words, that if they came out and said, hey, what the heck, you know, then suddenly they would be in a situation much like myself. And there have been instances where I've teamed up with some other Masons that those, you know, again, other challenging situations arose from that. So most Masons feel that it's expedient for them to be my friend in secret, but I'm not without my friends and without my moles. So just so that organization knows that. And by the way, it would appear that in the little duking it out fest that I'm having with them, I'm winning over here on the West Coast because their numbers right now are presently down to approximately 60,000 for California. Compare that to the fact that LA, the metro area, has a population of approximately 18 million. So that's a really, really bad ratio, comparatively speaking, to Dallas, the epicenter of it, where I came out of. So I'm in paradise in that regard.
I think that there's, what was it, this analogy that I had about pygmies in the long grass. If you get lost, how exactly are you going to send a signal to somebody else in the long grass? They're too short. You can't see anybody. Nobody can see your hand waving above it or anything. So you're going to stick a flag on a pole and like put it all the way up so they can see it. The problem is there's a lion on the long grass. So as soon as you stick your flag up for help, the lions can see it too, and they also start coming for you at the same time. It's just a question of which one reaches you first.
Yeah, well it's like that old the African parable, are you the lion or the gazelle? Yeah, it's very much like that. It's just, I suppose the sickness of it gets into the subject matter of the bloodline element, the it runs in families element, the mafia attitude element, and so forth.
The secrecy keeping element. I mean, I just learned yesterday off of Frederick on my show that every single one of the astronauts that landed on the moon were 32nd degree Freemasons at least.
Oh, yeah, they're all, and they all belong to a lodge that's, lodges are supposed to, blue lodges, that is, are supposed to, you know, be initiatory bodies that take men off the streets. But the astronauts all belong to the lodge at NASA called Tranquility Lodge 2000. You don't believe it, Google Tranquility Lodge 2000 and go to their webpage and look at it. It's all out in the open.
This is the thing. Even though things are all out in the open, they aren't repeated 1,000 times in the media and put in movies as facts, you know, just to kind of let people know.
Yes, bullseye. And this is where I was hoping the conversation would take a turn. Okay, you have things that are, yes, out in the open, but you've got such an intense disinformation campaign actively out there trying to spin it all around and point the finger elsewhere that it's, at first, it was on a level of disturbing. Now it's to a point of, from what I see from my vantage point, shocking and makes you want to ball up in the fetal position and just cry. Because I see so many people coming, especially here to LA, like kind of like that I want to be an actor thing. Now, I don't know if it's from the movie Nightcrawler or what, or just all of this Illuminati quote-unquote crap. But there's like this deluge of people now, it seems like, that want to come here or at least hop on the airwaves wherever they are and claim to be this, claim to be that, you know. And it takes me back to when I first hit the circuit. And man, you remember, I was put through the ringer. Everybody wanted to troll me and say, oh yeah, right, you're fake, that didn't happen. I have shown so many people now, journalists, etc., media types, what have you, all of the above, all of my paper copies of everything, degrees, patents, all of it. And it's as real as... And then the genealogy, too, that whole side of it. I've shown everybody that. So there is no disputing this. I just, when you think you're past the trolling, it kicks back in full force. So my conclusion from that is that it's never going to stop. And anybody in a public eye, whether they're a movie or TV star, a famous singer, a famous sports star, it doesn't matter. They're always going to... Haters are always going to hate, you know. So... It is what it is, but at the same time, what bothers me the most is the part of it that's orchestrated. And I think that part that is orchestrated runs very deep. And right now, I'm kind of freaked out as to who, you know, I mean, I trust you because you and I go like way back. But, you know, it's I'm just real leery right now because I've seen firsthand in my face a network in Hollywood censor material that is highly damning of two of probably the most sensitive topics there are, and it's a situation that's it's just leaving me speechless, actually.
Okay, here's what it is. You're telling the truth, okay, and you're telling a very uncomfortable truth, and you're also telling a truth that is so frightening to a lot of people who also extremely, extremely harshly believe other than what you're saying. And so when a politician discovers this dynamic, get this, as a politician, and this is branches into all people who don't want to offend people and want to have a wide audience, you have to say one thing to one audience and one thing to another, or you have to water down what you're saying so much that you missing out all the things that people disagree with each other on. That's what they want in order to get the biggest audience. So if you sell the truth, the real truth, the real scary truth, the truth that people don't want to buy, it's actually going to threaten the bottom line. It's going to threaten your voter turnout, right? There's one motivation behind it. However, there's other times when it's just not called for at all. And it's simply a deliberate act of sabotage.
Yes, and I'm getting very, very sick and tired of these deliberate acts of sabotage. It's really getting old, seriously. It's like you constantly have every time you take one step forward, you have to take 10 back because you're having to drop what you're doing to duke it out with these little trolls and little underlings and dogs that think that their handlers are going to one day take the spike collar off, and it's not going to happen. I don't know what I have to say to get it through to these people's heads. You're a tool, okay? You're not ever going to catch that carrot on that string they are dangling. Never. Okay? I was in that elect little elite, specially bred super soldier freak show crowd, okay, who actually had that access. These underlings are never going to get it. Okay, look what I had it, and look what happened to me. So, you think you're going to get it? The answer is no. So you can just forget your job selling out and working for the dark side. Forget it.
I'm actually getting a little bit peeved off with this whole thing as well. People want to compromise. They want to bargain with the New World Order. Dude, you're bargaining with people who child traffic, kill people's children, and set up
rampant pedophilia, rampant Satanism, rampant abuse of the public talent that actually drives all of this money into the entertainment industry and the sports industry. Yes. And then the evildoers, when they actually get caught red-handed and there's a literal landslide of evidence against them, they walk off scot-free because they have more money to finance a never-ending trial than the county does.
Exactly.
It's sickening.
All right, now, capitulating, all right? People are always saying yes to everything. Hey, do you want this extra job? You want to get this extra money? You want to do this extra thing? You want to do... Yes, yes, absolutely. Yes. And I just worked this out the other day, bro. It's actually the weak thing to do to go along with things, to say yes. It's a really strong thing to do and say, actually, no, I can't squeeze you in for another month. I've got too much work on my plate, bro.
Oh, yeah, no, I've had to divide my cell phones because I've had to put everything onto one that doesn't have any service hooked up to it, that's all like the social media and the apps and stuff, so that when I need to walk away from it, I can, you know. And then there's the bat phone that, you know, only those who should have the number do. And, you know, like today and the events that occurred just this morning in Hollywood, I had to walk away from it. I had to go hang out with my black cousin who, thank God, just moved here for the reasons he did, because he was always like my protector and back home, and I'm so glad that he's here. So this may sound ironic to some white people, but I've been hanging out the last few hours in a lovely park in Compton with my black cousin and enjoying the perfect California weather and safer and at less risk of anything wrong possibly happening than I am in Hollywood. How sad is that? How ironic is that? So, you know, that's where it's at.
People don't know that there's no limit to this kind of thing. Like, if I asked you, is there a ceiling? Like, is there a kind of evil that you could commit that is so evil that it can't actually be outdone? And it's like, no, I can't actually name any of that because I don't think there actually is a limit. Kind of like self-sacrifice or surviving a really, really painful ordeal that you just shouldn't frickin' survive. People who are capable of, like, breaching the limits on things in every direction, for good or for bad. And I think if you're on the side of good, it does you good to note that. Because not only does it mean that you're capable of things that you don't think that you're capable of, you can survive things that you didn't think you could ever survive, but it also means that you've got to be prepared for these people to come at you sideways in ways that you couldn't predict, in ways so horrible, so nasty, so cruel, so inhuman that you couldn't even conceive of it.
Well, from a personal standpoint, I do believe that that is the only reason that I have survived, because I was trained by them and I know their tactics and I know what they do and I know what to expect most of the time. Sometimes they can be creative, but often not. And
James, let's back up a little bit here. Are you saying that they taught you tactics of how to, like, you know, mess with people and get away with shit?
Oh, Vinny. Yeah, we would have to do a 4-hour show just on my family alone and what they were all involved in, and I've got a whole dossier of files that were supposed to have been destroyed until a distant relative found the only surviving copies in her attic selling her house. So, I mean, there's stuff that my family was so corrupt and so mob-tied and everything else, and Freemasonry was mandatory for the guys, and it was, I have nothing left for those people that raised me, quote unquote, or rather paid staff to raise me. No, it's sick. It was so tied into it. And it, I mean, on the one hand, it was great. I suppose you walk around town, everyone knows your name. You're famous, I guess, because your grandfather was this ruthless, you know, jerk in business or whatever, but you know, you practically eat everywhere for free because everything's run on accounts. You go get gas and petrol in the car. It's all run on accounts. You know, no cash is ever even seen. Money is no object, and everything is being done under the table. And it has this legal, perfect presentation. And we all get dressed up in our Ralph Lauren and go to the country club and have dinner in the Sky Room at Lakewood. And then, you know, what goes on behind closed doors is sick, 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 sick. So that was always life. And when I woke up on my 30th birthday, the morning of, and that book was in the process of being printed, and I couldn't, I was at the end of my tether. So I made the decision that a geographical cure was in order. So I moved to Los Angeles. And I do believe, despite the hardships I've encountered along the way and the challenging situations I keep mentioning, that it was and is still worth it. Obviously, I can make more of an impact here, and that's what I keep trying desperately to do.
I came up with this talk with Freighter the other day, and you know how there's all a bunch of these people that say, oh, I'm going to silver bullet these bastards. I've got this one way, this one solution to bring all the New World Order down. I just like piss myself laughing at these naive cunts, you know. You don't know what you're dealing with, bro. Okay, here's the kind of commitment that you need. You need the kind of commitment that the ocean has, okay? It doesn't matter how strong a rock is. Doesn't matter how long it's been there on the coast. You crash your waves against it over and over, all day, every day. And it doesn't matter how long it takes, as long as you're committed to it, you will eventually wash that rock away. Okay? That's the kind of thing that we need to be focused on, I believe, is be in it for the long term, because this isn't an overnight fight. This isn't a skirmish. This is a war between free humanity and evil scumbaggery that's been going on since, like, forever. Okay? And people think, oh, we're in the information age now. We're just going to solve it all of a sudden. God. All right, it might take another couple of hundred years, okay? I'm 30 and I don't think I'll see the end of the New World Order in my lifetime, all right? Even though we're rising against it as we speak, even though a good portion of the population is waking up. That's the kind of commitment I have, at least.
There's a such thing as miracles, so, you know, time will tell, but yeah. I've got hope. I have hope.
Yeah, exactly. Because somebody with that kind of perspective that we've got is very difficult to discourage, because we're already discouraged as much as possibly could be. You know, it's just like, yes. Take your best shot, buddy.
Hit me with your best shot. Fire away. Yes, please do. Because, no, I'm not going to stop. I am in it for the long haul, and I'm a free spirit, unfortunately, for some people who keep trying new and inventive ways of becoming my handler, and they find out every time that it does not and will not work. The programming is broken, it's going to stay broken, and there's nothing they can do to fix it. So, no, the answer is no. Just say no, no to drugs, no. So.
Well, except, wait. You know, because
tons of weed. Oh yeah, tell everybody your infuriation as a New Zealander of looking at Los Angeles on weedmaps.com.
Yes, and I even took a screenshot of it because local New Zealanders won't frickin' believe. All right, like I was in New Zealand. We are currently in the midst. I'm going to use my narrator voice right now. In New Zealand, we are currently in the midst of the Great Dope Drought of 2016, where near you come can find a tinny or baggy or even ounce anywhere they look. And the poor people that are so, so disabled that they can't even walk around trying to find some have to suffer in silence while the incredibly slow Ministry of Health goes through its rigorous testing and safety protocols to determine whether or not the plant that's never killed anybody in 10,000 years is safe before they allow any of them to have any of it at all. Oh, God. I actually came up with a song about this, actually. It was about Peter Dunn, who's our associate health minister, right? And for the last decade.
Well, I mean, so I had a question, because I grew up in Texas where weed was very, very naughty and still is. And so everybody always had, like, their weed dealer. So you don't even have that option? Everybody's, like, dry?
That's right. All right?
Oh, so my God.
Total full spectrum dryness, okay?
On the other side of the pond from you, the market is saturated.
All right, I got stoner friends for Africa, okay? And every single one of them that I spoke to, you know, some of them have been stoners for, like, 20, 30 years, and I've never seen a dope drought like this, bro.
Wow. That's crazy. I mean, it makes me feel like I take it for granted or something, because, I mean, I can... See, I live on the one hill that doesn't have a dispensary on it, but I just have to drive down to the next hill, and boom, there's 20, so...
You got first world problems, nigga.
Damn it, my Gucci heel broke. Ugh, no. I'm poor as a church mouse and struggling. Please help.
Yeah, it's another thing as well. I was wondering how you can actually make a hell of a lot of money and be incredibly successful and big and all over the place, as well as remain a very good person and not sell out and always tell the truth. And I was just thinking, like, you can't actually do that. You know, I've just been thinking about it. Like, people who are always really good people to everybody that they meet, you know, they don't look down on anybody. They're actually really good. They're exceedingly generous. And they aren't up themselves. They consider themselves as a part of a community rather than a leader or an owner or a ruler of it. And they live in extraordinary comfort that they worked really hard to build. Those people, Mike, did they even, like, fully exist? Like, because it's very interesting, because you can't get to that level without going up this... And I'm not saying it's these people's fault. It's just what the system does to people. You have to compromise who and what you are, what your dreams and your desires are, in order to make money off them. It's really strange, isn't it? Kind of like how rock groups or whatever, they just sit around and they jam for the fun of it and they get a lot of enjoyment. But as soon as there's some money in it, they got to have a record producer and this whole apparatus starts to build up, and then it just corrupts the music and the soul gets sucked right out of it because the money replaces the soul, right?
Well, right. You can liken it to Madonna. Do you have a singer or do you have a product? What is it? You know, yeah. Or Kiss. Are they rockers, or is it this giant corporate product enigma? You know, not that. And I'm not saying that Madonna and Gene Simmons are not marketing geniuses. That's clear and evident. But yeah, when does it stop being? And the same rules apply to journalism. Why and when did we stop vetting? Why and when did we stop self-censoring? Why and when did we stop saying no to a bunch of lawyers who have turned themselves into politicians? Because that's what 95 whatever plus percent of politicians worldwide are. So I mean, enough is enough. And I'm a bit of a European history fanatic, so I know for a fact you can look back over instances happening like this with rude rich white people, and time and again good does come around and win, but then we wind back up where we're at. So it just round and round we go. And at the center of it all are what? Secret societies that are thousands of years old as well. Older as the Scottish, when you take your 32nd oath and that whole, and by the way, we're older than any other government. Yeah, they mean that. They can't prove it, but they mean it when they say it, at least.
Okay, here's the thing. If you want to make money in this gig, what you have to do is you have to appeal to the people who are like, oh, I love the Constitution, I love the Bible, I love guns, and so, and I want to restore America, etc. Then you get money pouring in. But if you start talking about like aliens and occultism and so on and so forth, you're going to lose a good chunk of that audience, and the money flow stops. So you, there's a phrase in New Zealand journalism: reporters know what side of their bread to put the butter on, all right? And what that means is you don't shit where you eat. you don't threaten your money supply or your audience retention just because it's the truth. You have to find things that are true, but that will appeal to your audience demographic that actually has the money, okay? Now, I try to appeal to no one. I just tell the fucking truth. You know how hard that is? You know how stupid.
Yes, I've also consequently watched everything you've gone through since we first connected, and yes, it's you've been to hell and back so many times you got frequent flyer miles.
Yeah.
So
all right, so if you keep telling the truth, you're gonna piss off both sides of the political aisle every time you open your goddamn mouth, okay? And I accept that and I understand that. However, I'm willing to take one on the chin for the team. Because if other people who think the same thing that I do but do not have the courage to say it see somebody else saying it, maybe they will speak up themselves and empower themselves, right? I don't want your listenership. I don't want you to follow me. I want you to follow my example. I want you to become your own talk radio show host or your own mechanic or your own inventor, your own website runner, whatever the hell it is. I want you to be you, okay? If part of who you are happens to involve listening to the Vinny Eastwood show, then that's really good. But if part of who you are actually requires you to be more busy doing something far more important than just being the listener of some douchebag from New Zealand's radio show, then I would prefer that you do that, because the world needs you to be doing something important, not sitting on the sidelines watching other people do it.
Yes, I concur, and I think this is probably what's responsible at the moment for creating sort of the division you're seeing going on at the moment in the, what should we call it, the media. I'm going to use that term loosely as an umbrella word here. You've got the people who sit on a computer and presume to carry on a show or what have you. That's all well and good. Then you have the people who do that, but then when they're not doing that, they're also out at the marches and the protests and the rallies and the lay down in the streets and the whole nine yards. So there's two levels to how deep you're into this as a quote-unquote journalist slash activist. And I see a lot of people trying to call themselves activists, but are actually what we call armchair activists. And yes, it requires more people getting out and taking to their town hall, the local, the state senate. You know, you have the ability to call your congressman for a reason. And I think people have lost touch with that. I think people have become apathetic and they're wound up in their cell phones and they care more about what
it's frightening,
the trash Hollywood is putting out as opposed to the good stuff Hollywood's putting out, you know?
Yeah. Well, the fear is used to control you, because if you tell the average person, like if a listener called in, and, you know, they might be happy to talk to me because they know that I'm friendly and I'm not going to, like, be a dick to them, you know? But they're trying to call a congressman. I say, okay, call your congressman. That's actually kind of like, you know, you're sitting there, you're looking at the phone, and all of a sudden your heart's beating a little bit faster, your breath is starting to become a little bit more rapid, and it's anxiety, right? Anxiety pops up the second you actually try to make contact with somebody in a position of authority over you for some reason, as though your body naturally cowers to hierarchical structure heads. And I was just like, whoa. There's like a psychophysical connection going on here. It's when you've got enough trauma from authority figures in, lodged in your brain to have a permanent reaction in your limbic system every time you see one of them or a representation that even looks like them. Could you imagine that? Freaking out as though you've been busted and beaten up by a cop every time you see a cop or a judge or a lawyer or a doctor or a politician or a, you know, a congressman.
Yes, that's why my that's why I've been I'm so happy about my cousin who is black that just moved here, because all of his life he's been racially profiled, being in, you know, being seen inside the wealthy area of Dallas. He used to have police trail him to our house all the time. Does he belong here? Yes. F off, you know? And he's, you know, it's just, it's made his life a living hell for its own, in its own way. So I'm glad, I'm so glad that he's out here in California, where at least that no longer really exists.
Yeah.
So,
as Tupac said, you don't have to convince black people that there's an Illuminati that's trying to kill them. They know.
Right. They know. They know all about, you'd be surprised how much the black community knows about Freemasons and all of it. I mean, they know. It's just, they're not the type that walk around and rub it in people's faces and bring it up in polite, casual conversation, you know. White people are more into, like, the Illuminati, oh my God, you know. So
I got this. Well, in fact, I've just received a message for you, which from a listener who's tuning in, that I'll let you in on during the break that you actually met at a party one time. So that's an interesting little coinkadinky thingy. You never know who's going to be listening in. But the other question is, and I'm thinking about this now because I made that point earlier about how the there's a certain branch of the truth movement that cater towards that that right wing Christian gun right constitution demographic type thing, which I totally agree with, you know, a lot of the points in that, but I don't exclusively focus on that because I'm not interested in just covering those kind of issues for the money. All right, and if somebody's only talking about those kind of issues and they're suddenly getting big and they're all over the place and they seem to have a lot of dollars on hand, there's a reason why they're catering to your demographic, because you're the one demographic that has money left. On the other side of the demographic, you have the people who've already been shafted by the system, who have actually lost their jobs. Sometimes they have lost their hope. Sometimes they're suicidal. Sometimes they're depressed. Sometimes they don't have money to go to a counselor or a psychiatrist or anything like that. Sometimes they're so badly affected by the system and how it has treated them that they don't know what to do. Those are the kind of people that I really prefer to have listen to this show, because you cannot listen to this show and listen to it all the time unless you don't have a sense of humor or a criminal psychopath or something like that, in which case you probably wouldn't listen to the show at all, more like 5 minutes or whatever. But you will laugh. You'll feel inspired, you'll feel motivated, you'll feel encouraged, and you'll learn something, and you'll feel enlightened after every episode. It's 2 hours sounds like a lot, okay? It sounds like a lot. I know it does. But trust me when I tell you, I've been doing this show for 5 years, that 2 hours goes quick. Because when you got two when you got two intelligent people having a conversation, you'll be surprised how fast that time disappears. That's why a lot of people are saying things to me like they'll listen to a show and then they'll listen to it again. And sometimes they'll listen to a particular show that they like 7 or 8 times. All right. That's like watching a movie seven or eight times. That's the kind of quality and the kind of enrichment to your life this show can provide you. So please donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show and donate to American Freedom Radio, who are actually been hosting me for 5 years. As it stands. James, so sorry for that commercial interruption there.
No. I don't mind. It gave me an opportunity to adjust my air conditioner.
We all need to do that, especially when the seasons are changing.
Well, the seasons change hourly in L.A., so, you know, during the day it's nice and warm. Now the sun's gone down, so it's getting nice and cold, and yeah.
So. And then the chemtrails come out and it gets nice and illuminy. It gets a luminescence in the air.
And then, the reptilians come out and then they go at it with the Hollywood Satanists, and a good time is had by all.
The real Freemasons of Beverly Hills.
Hey, there was an offer to stick that on a network as a reality show that I've walked away from because I did not like how the terms of the deal sounded. It sounded like it was going to be extremely controlled and make me look like an idiot. So I said no.
Yeah.
I'll continue doing what I'm doing. I'll wait for something good, actually.
Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. I saw a little cartoon of Superman just earlier, right? And it's got a cartoon of Superman inside the cartoon of Superman. And Superman in the little cartoon is acting really weird and kind of strange and saying, "Crime does not pay." And Lois is talking to Superman just going, "What the hell did you sign that contract for? Did you not even get any creative control?" And he's like, "The money's going to charity." And it's like, you know, creative control is indeed one of the most important things. But as most artists will know, having all the control and accepting nobody else's input and taking too much leniency with your control that you've got can sometimes produce a very bad picture indeed.
Well, I've learned firsthand that when the control rears its ugly head, what happens first is all of a sudden out of nowhere, you find yourself being slammed with some sort of criticism of a piece or whatever from the higher ups it doesn't make any sense what they're saying. It's like they're reaching for a reason to be falsely angry about something that's not there, period. They may say something like, the quality sucks, while it's like HD perfect, you know, or whatever. It's just they'll come up with any reason to sit there and say, nope, we're not running this, no way, and then they don't want to talk about it. And if you dare say anything in return, then it turns into this this wild attack and fight, and it's insane. It's absolutely insane. So you're expected pretty much everywhere here to sit down, shut up, look pretty, and say what you're told to say, and that's the one thing I have a problem with. I will say what I'm told to say, but I'm not going to do it if it's a lie.
Yeah.
Or if it's disinformation, orchestrated, you know, et cetera. And that's when I have a personal problem, and that's when I explode and walk away from projects and have my famous meltdowns and all of the above.
Oh,
yeah,
he had a freaking Memphis meltdown, ladies and gentlemen. It was
That's because I'm a Georgia peach.
He ain't no gooey raspberry, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you that much.
No. Kitty has claws, but Kitty has to have claws, so.
And he keeps them on file. Now, there is another thing I wanted to ask you about. If you're a Freemason, okay, now, and you know suddenly that you're in an organization that is no good. What is the psychological process? Because it doesn't just suddenly go, you know, this organization's no good, and you leave that day. It's a long process, isn't it? Where you see one thing that that makes you go, and then another, and then another, and eventually it builds up to a point, or...
I know exactly the answer without even having to think about it. It's exactly like anyone out there who can relate to having a really sick family. The very first thing that you think that comes into your head is you want to fix them. You want to inspire a goodness in them. You want them to quit their, say, you have that sister who's the heroin addict. You know, you want to convince her to put those needles down or whatever. It's much the same. So then, you go into the denial and you go through the various phases and all of that. And then you finally arrive at the conclusion that it cannot be fixed because it refuses to be fixed. And so then what do you do? Well, you walk away from it, except in this specific instance, you can check out, but you can never leave, is their attitude. So when I walked away, I thought I was walking out of the door with my little box of stuff, like the classic moment, you know, from your desk in your office. And that was that. But that was not that. So
it was welcome to the Hotel Freemasonica.
Such a lovely place. No. And it's funny to me because they still think that I could be brought back into that environment, and they've lost their minds. I think at this point and I did counter their offer. I said, sure, hand me the California Grand Lodge. Let me shape it in my image. Let me do everything that should be being done with Freemasonry from it. I guarantee you it'll explode in membership. Things will go perfectly, like they did when I ran the Dallas Scottish Rite. But oh no, they didn't want to meet the terms of that deal because they might lose. What is that? Creative control? Ooh, yeah, we got to keep our hands on that, don't we? So,
are you able to create your own secret society? Like file a bit of paperwork in the SEC or something like that?
Oh, of course you have scam artists that try to do it all the time. I mean, Vinny, I don't like to talk about it a whole lot, but you know, because of the death of Nicholas Devere, I became the Grand Master of the Order of the Dragon. So, but the reason why I really don't discuss that is because it's not worth discussing. There's currently 13 active members. It's defunct. It's in suspended animation, as it were. So it's not even worth bringing up except to talk about it historically, you know, because I seriously doubt at this point that it's ever going to evolve anything beyond what it is.
If you are the Grand Master, so, let's say you started up a lodge in LA or something, you know, in a neighborhood somewhere, and you ran it the way you think that Freemasonry should be run. What if you actually revitalized and you actually changed that and you came out as a beacon or an example of what to actually do when you're studying the mysteries of the occult?
Well, it's interesting you should ask that, because I recently, and I'm going to have to choose my words on this one real carefully. I recently reached out to, to explain this is briefly and is easy to understand for the audience. With the whole situation and the topic matter of the Knight Templars, it all goes back to a split. The man responsible for the split was a man by the name of Aubrey de Vere. Okay. He caused a rift that caused the Templars as they were originally to split into various branches. You have the Masonic Knights Templar that I am. You have the SMOTJ, which stands for Sovereign Military Order of the Temple of Jerusalem, and you have the Knights Hospitaller. Okay. But what they all kind of seem to have lost over the knowledge of over the years, or become less cognizant, I should say, is that we are all basically one big happy family. And I've sort of gone to, it was sort of like that scene in The Godfather, you know, where you go to meet the heads of the five families. And I went to the heads of the various Templar organizations, and I said to them, I have an idea that I think you should consider. What if the Templars take this back over, go back to the way things were once done when it worked right and it served the purposes of good, and, you know, tear down these walls, Mr. Gorbachev, you know, that whole spiel. That's what I gave them. It impacted them very deeply, I'll put it that way. It was received very pleasantly, I'll put it that way as well. Everybody seemed to walk away from the conference call happily. I know that they're all still sitting around milling over it and discussing it endlessly in their committees, but that's to be expected. So I'm sure they'll come up with an answer soon enough, but we'll see. Because I would be, yes, to answer the question, I would be willing to participate in such an endeavor, but I'm not a miracle worker, I'm not Superman, and I can certainly not do something like that on my own. So that's such a back burner issue right now. I have much bigger fish to fry in Los Angeles than opening up a lodge. And it would, I hate to say that, because it would do so much good if I could pull that off, but you know what? I'm missing the one crucial element to do it, which is money. So, you know, people, I know this from the family I grew up in, people don't get far in this world without financial backing. So that's the situation with that.
I was just wondering as well, because it's like there's so many projects that people could do if they only had a little bit of money. Like, it wouldn't take $1 million, it wouldn't even take $1,000. In some cases, somebody could put on a really nice event at a community hall for as little as $100, but they don't have it, right? And this is what I'm talking about here when it comes to, you know, the people who are going after the money in this movement, all right, as opposed to just, you know, leveling with people and saying, look, we're doing the right thing. Can you help us out? because there's so much that needs to be funded and there's so much that isn't being funded. There's so much that needs to be participated in that isn't. And that's kind of like a vicious circle, isn't it?
Yes, well, like they say, you follow the dollar. And that's what I've currently done in this latest challenging situation, and it's looking very murky as to where those dollars lead. So once again, there you have it. And the sad part here is I know for a fact there's a tremendous amount of good people in the world that have a lot of money, but I see them doing horrible things with it or donating to bogus charities. You know, like if you think Susan G. Komen is legit, or Greenpeace for that matter, you need a fact check quick.
Indeed, and you can learn all about that and more by watching The Festidler on the Roof. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, ladies and gentlemen, on American Freedom Radio. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, hour number two. It's the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? And my very special guest is James Robert Wright. There's a repetition in my mind whenever I try to pronounce your name, is James Francis Ryan. You know, for some reason, but yeah.
Well, if I had my real father's last name, and I'm not some bastard child, I was born in wedlock. I was lied to about who my father was. If I had his last name and my family had not changed my name, it would be Thompson. So that would sound interesting.
James Robert Thompson.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, let's see if we can actually make this clear for people, because I'm going to get this down, all right? So, how exactly do they stalk you? Okay, so you've come out of Freemasonry and you're just one person, you're one targeted individual by the Freemasons, but I know of many others, one of which in New Zealand that came to my house not too long ago, and it's painful, actually, just to be in the presence of people like yourself, James, when talking about this subject matter. We're not avoiding it, because you can't remember it and talk about it without the subsequent emotions being triggered off and giving off that same kind of energy pulse. And unless somebody's like a psychopathic nitwit, all right, they'll feel it. I feel it, and it hurts me, and I don't like it. But conveniently, we're on Skype.
We're on Skype, yes. Now that they've started charging outrageous prices to call New Zealand, my God, they're trying to make it impossible. Oh, and I have intelligence. I cannot say where it comes from, the British type. I'll leave it at that. That there are several blockades currently in place that no one really even knows about, like in the North African continent, the Middle East. You'd be surprised who you cannot call in any way. Skype, nothing at the moment. So good luck with getting through to some poor reporter in Palestine or Croatia or God knows where. It's just not going to happen. So we're fortunate, yeah, to even be able to still communicate, because it seems that America and New Zealand are the two countries who are the most PO'd about the TPP. So it's important that we communicate from across the Pacific, because we feel the same way about the garbage. So.
And it's also very important because we're both members of the Five Eyes organizations behind Project Echelon, who realized long ago that it's illegal to surveil your own population, but it ain't illegal for your neighbor to surveil your population and then just share the information with you.
Yeah. Well, let's
crack me
so,
up, bro. I do.
So wait. So where were we? I'm sorry. Well, the last question you asked me, I'm getting a little zany brainy here.
Okay. Well, we're talking about the concept of exactly how they stalk you. You know, like what it's like. Because
the person I've spoken to,
it's like on it's almost like a daily basis. There's something weird and basically, it's an all-encompassing thing, and it affects your entire life, like a parasite attached to your back that only reveals itself to you occasionally, but you know the whole time that it might be there.
Yeah, yep, you're right. Well, for me, the way it started was, you have to understand the backstory. To have been in that position I was in, I had a company-issued smartphone from the Scottish Rite IT department. I had a brand-new company-issued Dell computer from the Scottish Rite IT department, the idea being so they could always be in touch with me, and that from the convenience of my desk at home, if I was ever at home, which I rarely was, could still log into my computer terminal and have it be the same and all that. So I noticed immediately upon leaving, what gave it away was I was backing down the driveway. I was staying in my old room at my aunt's house, in Dallas, and I was backing down out of the garage, down the driveway, and my phone rings. And it was a man who just recently mysteriously dropped dead, who was the author of All My Pain at the Scottish Rite, Buck Howard, calling me saying, "Where are you going?" It's like, "Well, how do you know I'm going anywhere?" And that's when it began to set in that they really had a strong surveillance already on me. So what I did then was I went out to my aunt's lake house. She had a lake house out on what's called Lake Louisville. It was out on the end of the cove in the colony, very secluded. Everybody knew everybody. So, you know, any trespassers, it's Texas, you're going to be shot, you know, type situation. So I felt relatively safe there. I went there to kind of rest and recoup. I had friends come by and visit, two of whom were Masons who had front row seats for everything that was going on. And we went out on a little like dinghy on the water, because we had a private dock on the, we were only house that had a private dock on that lake. And we went on the water and we're just sitting there talking, and my phone just will not stop ringing, will not stop. And every time it's ringing, and it's like buzzing across the little seat it's sitting on the boat. And every time it says Dallas Scottish Rite, Dallas Scottish Rite. And my friend, who's a Mason, who's sitting in the boat with me, goes, "God damn, are they that relentless? Why don't you throw that fucking thing in the water?" I go, "No, there's evidence in it. I need it." And he goes, "Well, then you need to disconnect it from service, because you know they're going to go in and try to delete it." So then I immediately took it up to Sprint at the time. So I went down the street to a Sprint store, had the phone, you know, had the SIM card taken out, totally cut off everything. And I still have that, because all that stuff is still in there. Very damning emails, texts, you know, everything I've written about and railed about. And yeah, and so that was the first thing I did. I had to purge everything electronic from my life, because it was all compromised. They'd tinkered with every bit of it, their IT department. So I had to get all new stuff. That helped, but then the situation mutated to then private detectives were after me. So every time I walked out of my front or back door, I never knew where a lens was going to be. And then it became that. And it still is that to a degree, because I still try to retain as much privacy as is possible, but it's becoming more and more increasingly difficult. That's why I moved out of Hollywood proper, because it was impossible there. So that's where it carries into. They will stop at nothing to try and figure out where you go, what you do, who you talk to, why you talk to them, what you talk about, what your plans are, what you're into, whether that's culturally, sexually. They try to find out everything they can, so they can find anything they can to try and exploit you with and compromise you as a personality, then commit a character assassination if they don't commit a literal assassination. This is the game. So, and I know it turns a lot of people off, and a lot of people get scared and apprehensive, but you know what? Look at what they're doing. They're destroying this planet. If Fukushima doesn't kill us, or the chemtrails don't get us after that, you're going to die of something anyway. So it might as well be going down for something that's right.
That was the
right
Scottish. I was also thinking about this as well when this lady was at my house talking about these Freemason stalkers that were like stalking her around, all different cars and everything coming and going outside the front of her house with their headlights on, tooting in the middle of the night. And it's kind of like collective punishment in the military. Collective punishment because one person screws up and everybody gets punished for it and has to do extra press-ups. The reason why they do that is it's to turn everybody against you. Okay? And this is exactly what they want. Not only do they want to be able to discredit you and have nobody believe a word that comes out of your mouth when you say it, but they want people to think that you're dangerous, that they should be afraid to even be near you.
True, but I think in my case, it's a very unusual case. Like I've told so many people, you know, it's a situation that's never happened before. So They're confused as to how to handle it. They've handled it horrendously bad to date and continue to and probably always will at the rate it's going. And they can't stop it. They can't counter what they admitted to me privately that my PR kicks theirs ass, okay? They know it. Because they know, I know what I'm doing, I know what I'm saying, they know it's the truth, they know they can't deny it, they know they can't produce a body of evidence to counter mine, so I'm winning that fight. It's slow and difficult, it's kept me at the throes of destitution, but I would say that I have done the right thing and I have really socked it to them. Have I paid a price for that? Absolutely. A tremendous one. You know, like I love that Depeche Mode song. There's two. Show You the World in My Eyes and Walking in My Shoes. Both those songs so accurately depict what it's like to be born into this crap and to have to deal with it and to have to make these choices.
I think it's about not accepting defeat, right? And that's the only way you can actually have victory, isn't it? Is to not accept defeat. They only beat you once you decide to, I'm just giving up, all right, I'm going to shut up now. And they still won't leave you alone anyway, even if you do. They'll still follow you around wherever the hell you go, you know? Think about that. It's like a ghost.
Of course, it's sickening. It's sickening. You know, like I said, Junior's my protector, and just in the times that he's been over at my house, he's already removed two prowlers, someone skulking my car. Yeah, I mean, it's constant. I always have to look over my shoulder, and I drive a convertible, and let me tell you something, I cannot drive through Hollywood proper with the top down, because it creates problems. So, it's come to that, you know, and I'm up for the challenge, but at the same time, I wish more good people out there would lend their support in some way. Some way.
I also find that with this woman that came around, that the greatest difficulty that she had is that to bring up these memories and to actually show me the documentation of stuff that she's taken over 20 years she's been getting stalked, bro. 20 years. She's been to England, she's been to Australia, she's been to Gibraltar, they follow her everywhere she goes, all right? Not more than a couple of days that she arrives in a new location, there she is being stalked by Masons. It's un-effing believable, right? No cell phone, no internet connection at home, you know, just keeps all of that stuff at work so that they can't bother her when she's at home, but they still bother her when she's at home anyway, all right? Now, I was trying to... whew, man, I'm starting to get like a big heart rush, right? This is the thing. I'm so empathetic that when people kind of are in my face and I can feel their pain and I actually pay attention to them, I kind of go through like a mini panic attack just hearing somebody going through this kind of stuff. And I've had them with you as well before, James. And this is the problem, because in order for anybody to actually listen through, say, for example, an interview like this or some of the interviews that I've done, is actually an intensely painful experience because you can see the damage that it does to a human being. The other thing I noticed was very interesting is that you get a fragmented memory a pathway kind of thing going on, because you'll start talking about one thing, but because that one thing happened so many X amount of years ago and it happened at this exact time with these exact people involved, etc., but there were also about 20 other different factors involved leading up to that point and about 10 different things that happened after that point that were also connected, the ability to tell somebody about an incident is actually a very, very difficult thing to remember clearly because of the enormous backstory and connections involved, right? In order to basically speak like a documentary is not a skill people have. You just can't do it. You can't compile 20 years of research or however many years of stalking or whatever an experience and actually describe in detail what it's actually like. You can describe specific instances, but in order to give somebody a general overview, there isn't a general overview because it's a story without a middle and without an end. This is just the beginning.
Oh, well, yeah, and that's how I even have, you would think that what I went public with would have gone out, had its fervor, its moment in the sun, and then it would have died down, and that would have been that. But it hasn't, because the situation itself has changed and evolved, and it's captivated people. It's turned it into an enigma of sorts. I mean, I've been described by, you know, as enigmatic, and it makes me wonder sometimes, like, really? I mean, is it all that strange? Yes, I guess it is, you know, but it's me, and I assure you, I'm actually very goofy and childlike, you know, in private, but then dealing with these types, I have to be this ferocious little knight, and it can get tiring, but you know what? Like I said, I'm not going to stop. That's one thing that they did successfully ingrain in me is you never quit a battle. You commit Harry Carey like a samurai before you quit a battle, so it's not going to stop.
Now, how do you exactly do you deal with an enemy that is not going to stop?
Well, you keep going on. You press on. Another day, another word of truth that jerks their enemy pants down. You know, it's a back and forth. It's two lines exchanging fire over a zone. It's warfare.
Have you ever noticed that when people give you advice after you tell them what's happened to you, when you tell them 1/100th of 1% of what's happened to you, they presume to be able to give you advice on how to fucking deal with it?
Yes, it's very rare that you meet someone in your life that you're blessed enough that you have such a common, like, soul bonding, and you've both seen crazy shit, and you know, and suddenly it's one of those, you know, where have you been all my life friendships, and those are very rare and very special. But with everybody else, I understand that when I go to a public engagement, what's required of it and what I have to do. But I'm always, always cautious, because for all I know, that guy in the crowd could be a pissed off Mason and have a buck knife in his, you know, coat pocket or strapped to his thigh or something, you know, anything. I mean, it's the stuff that's the situations that have arisen around me are so crazy and out of this world. You can't write them. You would think that a Hollywood film crew would have jumped all over this already. But no, it's just, it is what it is.
Hollywood film crew hasn't jumped all over it is because...
it's too touchy.
Yeah, I would say that it's because it might have something to do with the 400 some odd screenshots I've got on my computer desktop of all seeing eye pyramids, black and white Masonic floors, and the number 33 in Hollywood movies across all genres, all decades, and all subject matters. You know, might have something to do with it. I don't know.
Well, the Jimmy Kimmel Live studio is not in the Freemason Lodge building from Hollywood Boulevard. Yes, it is.
Yeah. He'd be turned into Jimmy Kibble and fed to the dogs.
Well, if he turns on his handlers, I'm sure he would be, yes.
And you know, look, Jimmy, word of advice, bro, if you're listening to this, don't bite the hand that feeds your son, all right? You don't want a piece of this pie. Stick to your jokes, bro. You know, keep doing what you're good at.
Well, it was on his show that Jim Carrey kind of went a little honest there for a second and was saying, oh, come on, you know, the Illuminati, da-da-da, which I hate that word, but nevertheless, that was the oral exchange on that show that night, and that was interesting.
The all-mocking tongue.
Yes, that was the pun. And but what you're saying about this woman there that was being stalked for all these years, do you remember that story? It was like a couple or maybe 3 years ago in the media. It broke in the mainstream media, and then all of a sudden it was swept under the rug, and it was about Lindsay Lohan. And the story was that she had to go to the police because of, quote, a Freemason that was stalking her. and there were pictures and everything, and then it all got wiped.
This organization's so powerful that people don't have any idea. And the thing is, it infects systems because it's not an ever-present thing. It's not like they walk around wearing their big white Masonic aprons in public when they're in the movie studios and all of that kind of stuff. Okay, this is a secret society, and the key word there is secret. So the amount of power and influence that they have is unknowable.
Yes, that's how they keep it, because you are never required, except to another member, to divulge whether or not you're a member. And there's all the little, you know, you walk up to some, you just blatantly at, well, a lot of them like to say, you know, are you a traveling man? That gets more old school. But the more new school would be, you know, are you a Master Mason? And if the guy replies, I am, then, you know, you pretty much know, okay, well, we can run through the handshake, but otherwise it's pretty much confirmed at this point. Plus, you can also tell in the way that the other guy talks, because we learn we have to do all that memorization work, and it's all in old English, so it affects your vocabulary a little bit, and you can kind of tell. And that's why I love when you hear about, oh, someone, former Freemason, this or that. It's like, oh, yeah, right.
You wouldn't be able to come up with a phrase or something like that. Like somebody said something in a phrase that made you indicate, yeah, he's amazing.
Oh, yeah. There's little hints you can drop. There's, you know, the Masonic distress signal, which kind of looks like
doing
the YMCA a little bit, you know.
You mentioned vocabulary, I mean.
Yeah. Well, the distress call is, oh, Lord, my God, is there no help for the widow's son? That's what kept when the Texas Army captured Santa Ana and he gave that distress signal, they let him go. And he retired to Mexico and died of syphilis.
Because
that's what you do. You can be a war criminal and commit genocide. That's fine. Just give the Masonic distress signal and you may go.
Yeah.
And live on the beach.
All right, you can go. Here's your syphilis. On your way.
Well, he already had the syphilis, but yeah, it was, here's your beach house.
Okay, so it wasn't part of his punishment.
No.
Because that would be just cruel and unusual.
But, yeah.
Yeah, cruel and unusual. I think that's the three words of the day.
Well, karma. That would be a karma thing for him at the time with that. Because otherwise he would have lived to, what was it, 96 that we found out that Hitler lived to in Argentina? So, yeah.
Did we find that out? I didn't recall.
Yeah, that's another story that broke that, again, was wives. They produced pictures of him, old, with, like, this young wife and everything. It was not a doctor job. It was real. People corroborated the story. It's all been wiped.
Whoa.
These stories keep getting wiped.
No. They don't get wiped. They're still there. But they don't get hyped is the thing. Or is it kind of like a spectrometer thing? Okay, is this the kind of thing we're going to hype or wipe? You know? Is it going to be wiped? Well, why is it going to be wiped? Well, because it's of huge interest to everybody. It'll generate massive, massive attention. But it'll also inform people that we've been lying to them for quite some time. Okay, it gets wiped.
Yes, I suppose that's the rationale. But I think what these news organizations are missing the point on is they hold the power. What are they going to do? Shut down their broadcast airwaves? They can't. They have backups. So they can broadcast what they want all day long, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. And you know what? If that threatens the advertising dollars that the pharmaceutical companies are pouring in or whatever, dirty lobby group, what have you, guess what? Better good dollars that are derived from goodness will come and fill that hole.
Sometimes
okay.
I wish I had some dirty derivatives on the side, or some lobbyist money, or some kind of super PAC from APAC. You know, it'd be great. But
oh no, I was showing my friend Corey my family's one of their financial statements. We were laughing because it was funny, because the joke was like it was something from, you know, like Dr. Evil's family's stock holdings, because it read literally like an A to Z list of, you know, DuPont, Merck, BP, Shell, Royal Dutch. Verizon. I mean, you name it, it's evil, it's on there.
Yeah. Okay, you know what this mother... You know what he did? He looked at the attendee list of the Bilderberg Group that year, and he said, okay, I'll invest a little bit in every single one of the CEOs of companies that attended that year. Boom!
Right.
I mean, seriously, invest in evil!
Yeah. I mean, seriously, if I can't say that I'd be lying if I wouldn't. If I had money to throw around right now into the stock market, yeah, sure, why not invest in a little bit of RFID or whatever? It's not going to go away. You know, they're always going to use it for at least packaging or some crap. So, I mean, yeah, you might as well put some money into some, you know, and then take control. Then you have power as a stockholder. Oh, my gosh. What if somebody with a lot of money bought a real evil corporation and suddenly made them go good? Well, like in Pretty Woman, when Julia Roberts made Richard Gere go from being the evil corporate destructor into like, I want to build ships with you, Mr. So-and-so. Yeah. Where's that?
It can only exist in Hollywood.
No, it can exist in the real world, and it has.
No, I don't think so. I haven't seen any massive, giant Fortune 500 evil corporation go good, you know? I've seen them do massive PR campaigns and release a few products and stuff like that to make them look like they're not as evil as they actually are, but they're still just as evil as they always were, except now they're worse because people don't suspect it anymore.
Well, people have become apathetic, and what people have also forgotten is we're still living. You know what? You can say America all day long. Let's call it by its corporate name, the Virginia Company, and let's call it what it really is, a monarchy, because it's all ruled by a family of cousins. They're all interrelated. That much is true and proven and on academic, peer-reviewed, you know, irreputable documentation, so we can move past that now as fact or fiction, as fact, and get into why. Well, because the system is set up that way, that's why. And that goes into everything else. And so...
I really hate the people who are just like, oh, but that's just thinking about it too complexly. Look. Things aren't actually as simple as you might think. Okay, like going up against a system that's this old and this complex and has been set up over this long a period of time of advancement and research and engineering itself and reinventing itself and having the same intention the whole way along, you think it's going to be easy to comprehend what they're up to, let alone what their plan is? Okay? It's taken a long time for humanity to even have a tiny portion, a little speck of dust in a desert of us to suddenly wake up to the actual truth. Okay? Very, very little. But there are ways, okay? And I found that because it's a complex system, you're only really capable of understanding one little part of it at any one time, okay? That's what human beings are. I mean, do you know anybody who's a hematologist and a psychologist and a structural engineer and an architect? No? You know why? Because it takes a hell of a lot of commitment to be good at either one of those. And to be able to do two is, like, extremely unlikely. Okay, so if you're not a superhuman being, okay, and there are superhumans on this planet, man. They are, I've met some people who can calculate stuff that just makes me look like a dumbass, and it was very humbling to behold, right? Those kind of people. If you're not one of those, pick something, okay? Pick something you actually like doing that screws the New World Order in some way, and that's very easy to do. Think about what the New World Order wants from you. It wants your tax money. It wants your attention. It wants you to be afraid, and it wants you to be ignorant. So if you do anything at all that causes people to be less afraid, that causes them to distract themselves from all the bad stuff that affects them in a really dark way, something that relieves them of their ignorance of a situation, any situation, something that you love and enjoy, do you have any idea how difficult a person like you would be to stop?
Well, the extremes that they go to is they try to get to the people that you do love and try to either drive wedges into those relationships or otherwise scare them into not wanting you around, as if your presence brings imminent danger and it scares them. So that can be very discouraging and disheartening, but you know what, like everything else, you work your way through it and then you learn who your true supporters are, other people who are also willing to go the distance. So it's a game kind of like of hit or miss. You know, some people are willing to go balls to the wall and some just are not. I've been asked before, but multiple people have put this to me before. If you could wave a magic wand or whatever, or have a magic wish, would you trade places with someone and just be like average guy that goes to his average office, does his average job, goes home to his, you know, 4-bedroom house with 2-car garage with picket fence, and reads the mail and the newspaper and sits down and watches your favorite sitcom and goes to bed and gets up the next day and repeats the process? And the answer is no, because even if I wanted that, I already know what I'm. I'd have to have a completely genetic makeup for this to be a valid argument. Second, I would have had to have grown up in an entirely different family for this to be a valid argument. Thirdly, I would still have to have lived a life free of any influence of these orders and things. So I've obviously been put by the universe in this position to do this and to jerk their pants down and to be naughty by their accounts and whatever. You know, I see good people applauding me, so I know that as long as the good people have my back, I'm doing something right, because the bad people are trying to compromise me. The good ones are, you know, giving me the ovation. And that's where you know that there's light at the end of the really dark, murky tunnel.
Well, in order to do anything other than what you're doing, everything that you are and everything that you've ever done needs to have not happened. Right? It's just like, you don't really have much of a choice, eh?
Well, plus you're getting into weird quantum and string theory and timeline ideas, and my mind can't quite go there without tripping out. So, you know, it is what it is. A situation is what we're given, and you can either make the most of it or the worst of it. Either way, there will be an outcome, and the response to anything must equal the threat, first of all. So there's a big threat out there, and so there needs to be a big response to it.
Mm.
And that's why it's so important for people to get involved. So there you go.
Yeah.
Well, back to square one.
Speaking of square one, having faith that things will actually turn out and not like retreating inwards and crashing and stuff like that, it's actually quite hard, because all my instincts tell me to do that quite regularly. And it's like, no, that's the bad, Vinny. I don't like it.
Well, you know, that's part of the reason why I'm angry over the current situation that has evolved from what we filmed at Conscious Life Expo, because I'm sitting there playing cameraman to Corey interviewing Brandy Vaughn, the Merck pharmaceutical whistleblower who they tried to kill and she had to leave the country over it. And then interviewing Karen Kane, whose daughter, Lauren, was killed almost instantly by a flu shot. And to watch these two very strong, empowered women give an interview to another strong, empowered woman, and to see them smiling and happy and cheerful and warm and loving, it listens to a gut. You're hearing this gut-wrenching story, but you're seeing something so beautiful that's come out of it. And it's a really ironic, bittersweet enigma, but again, it reaffirms for you that you're not the only one out there that's had it rough, girl, you know, and we've all had it rough in our own unique separate ways. Mine happens to be this freakish Masonic bloodline way, but to each his own. And working together, we're able to accomplish amazing things. So, you know, like next, what I've got to do is I've got to get on the phone with everybody that I was involved with at Conscious Life Expo, and we've got to coordinate, and then we've got to get our the documentary that we shot out of our own. And you know something? In so doing, we will each combined have more followers than most of the big networks. So there you go. That means we win that.
You ever tried to hold water in your hand? It's impossible, isn't it? And the tighter you squeeze your hand closed, the more water leaks through your fingers.
That's true.
See, a lot of people don't know what the New World Order is, you know. They don't know what they're dealing with.
No, it's real skanky.
But conversely, because of the hubris that the people involved in the New World Order have, they don't know what they're dealing with. They don't understand the threat of a creative, empowered person who is willing to die for their beliefs. They don't understand how dangerous that is. All right? Especially if they're non-violent. Like the non-violent ones that are willing to die for their beliefs are the most dangerous.
Yes, like in, did you see Spectre?
Yeah.
Yeah, at the end where M pushes, the young guy who's the sellout off the back of the top floor balcony of his own building, you know, and the guy who says democracy, whatever that is, and, you know, like he's so suave and everything. But I mean, that is what you're dealing with. That really personified perfectly the attitude of the people who are... I'll just say that the film was well written. It wasn't exactly well shot, but it was well written, at least in the delving into what is Spectre. That's what you're dealing with.
I was
it's not led by one guy named Blofeld at the top who pets a white cat. No, it's a consortium, syndicate.
It's been in the works for a long time, and I saw this you know, Honest Trailers, John Bailey, his trailer for Spectre was, you know, just as great as all of his other trailers. But he mentions this phrase. It's not in the movie. It's just something the scriptwriters came up for him to say. And he said, it's James Bond versus the Illuminati. And I was just like, yeah, that is what it is, isn't it? The Illuminati has become a catch-all term that now gets used to demonize, you know, people who believe in conspiracy, i.e. people that think that there's such a thing as deception, power, and evil in the world, you know, like...
The only scene in the movie that struck me as real that affected me personally watching it was the scene, when he sneaks, he steals the Aston Martin, he drives to Italy, and he sneaks in to the Spectre meeting. I've been in rooms just like that, at tables with people that evil just like that. To break this down into language, people might be able to see a picture get painted of. That stuff exists. But again, it's not like there's number one and number two and number three and what's your report number seven? No. It's much more sophisticated and what's the word I'm looking for? Elitist? Aristocratic? Yes.
Formal.
Yes, like. Well, why do you think we all have to grow up and go to cotillion? You know, duh.
I didn't even know what a cotillion is. I thought that was some kind of a Cantonese Sicilian.
Darling, it's the other form of coming out. There's from the closet and to a cotillion. So,
okie dokie.
No one will understand that probably except American Southerners. But okay, yeah.
They can have it. but yeah, it's interesting actually, because I was thinking about that exact premise just this morning when I woke out of bed. I was thinking about this. there's a room full of really powerful, really influential, really evil people having a meeting right now. I'm just waking up in bed and I'm at home. And I'm just thinking, this happens all the time. And it's a secret meeting, all right? And these people are deciding my fate while I'm brushing my teeth.
Yes, they do it all the time. Oh, and my memory, I've been dealing with so many things. It was Karen Kane, the woman we interviewed, her daughter, it was a DPT shot, not a freaking flu shot. I had flu shot on my mind because I was going to say when we were talking about that for people who don't believe it, the Masons even put, that's why I've gone anti-vaccine, because that's another way I'm socking it to the Masons. Because if you don't believe me, Google. Okay, this is my Mother Lodge where I was initiated at 5300 Forest Lane, Dallas, Texas. John L. DeGrazier, that's spelled DeGrazier. Again, DeGrazier. Flu shot. Google that. See what comes up. It'll be very interesting, I promise. Masons pushing flu shots. How much more blatant can it get? And that's when I was being initiated. That was normal. That was just par for the course, run-of-the-mill, daily business. So they wonder, yeah. And right now, you're right. There is some meeting going on with some higher-ups of somewhere to somewhere else calling across the ocean or something, you know, or seated around one of those darkly lit rooms at a gigantic table that you wonder how they even got the damn thing in there in the first place. And it's an enough is enough. And you know something? It's not going to, much like what I described to you about the situation with the Masons that still support me, but they don't actively publicly support me. They do it in secret. Okay. It's going to take all of them. And this is a metaphor for everyone in general, but it's going to take all of them to stop and say, that's it, I'm breaking with protocol, to hell with protocol, we're going to have a discussion about what's right and what's wrong. And if that offends you, leave the damn room. Goodbye. And oh, and don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out, you old curmudgeon. Who the hell do you think you are? Oh, you think you're going to be somebody? You think you're going to pull some puppet strings over people and create discord and ruin the planet for everybody and profit by it? Are you serious? Really? Do you have any idea what you're going to be reincarnated as? Ugh, so stupid. Yeah. So freaking stupid.
Mm. You even noticed the insanity of selfishness? It's like, hey, I'm part of an organic system. I'm a very interesting, interchangeable being that has the ability to evolve and change with the times. You know what I should do? Ignore all of these gifts that I've been given and just accumulate crap and never actually evolve at all. And try to make sure that other people don't do that either by taking away the things that would help them do it.
Well, Vinny, that's why I was driven out of the Scottish Rite in that job in the first place, is because I was making it a little bit too cool. Things were going a little bit too well under my reign, and my administration cleaned up its act. And suddenly, the building was being used in the way it was designed to be when it was built in 1898. You had young guys hanging out after work, shooting pool in the billiard room, throwing back a beer. You know, masonry was becoming cool again, but it was creating a problem, because they were losing their grip on power very quickly, and I was at the helm of it all, I guess. So, I mean, I was the person responsible for the coolness factor. So, yeah, yes. I mean,
obviously.
They screeched the brakes on that.
I also found that one time I got fired because I did write a 7-page essay about what the things that could be improved in the company in order to improve profit margins and staff retentions, training protocols, etc. Because the company didn't have any training protocols. It's a staff turnover was through the roof, you know. And I'd spent a couple of months working after getting a promotion and actually been walking all around the building and speaking to people in different departments and everything. And I actually got a complex view of it. And because I wrote that essay, they then fired me. after doing nothing and implementing none of the decisions or whatever. Just, you know, we'd like you to sign this and go away, please. And I go, okay, well, what do I get? And they go, well, we'll give you 6 weeks' pay. 6 weeks' pay today to go away and never have to work for you people again? I'll take it.
Yeah, well, I think, at least in my life experience, every time I've ever been fired, it's always been ultimately because it was to ultimately cover somebody else's backside that had screwed something up or another, and someone had to take a blame. And it's the same situation with the damn Scottish Rite. Buck Howard and his higher-ups and the Supreme Council itself made tremendous mistakes, and there had to be a patsy, a fall guy. And so I was elected to be that person, you know. And I've heard rumors that supposedly the top three up on that Supreme Council, you could call them, supposedly like think I'm kind of okay and what happened was wrong and blah, blah. But you know what? If they really feel that way, pick up the damn phone and call me, you know, or fly to LA and let's sit down and have lunch and talk about it. Don't placate me. I'm not stupid. I was in the gifted and talented program that you recruited me out of, remember? So it's like they forget what they're dealing with. Well, I'm a force to be reckoned with, and I'm not. Yes.
Right. In fact, you know what's happened? They became Masons and they were entitled to it, okay? They didn't actually have to really, really give of themselves in order to become what they are. And when they did eventually get themselves into that position, it was a long time later, after putting in a lot of effort. Somebody else comes along who in fact embodies all the principles that the Brotherhood is actually supposed to embody, and indeed exudes those exact talents and awesomeness that is indeed supposed to be there but no longer is. And it makes them look bad. It makes them jealous. And also it shows the entire system for the fraud that it is. Because have you ever noticed that as soon as you tell the truth, a lot of different lies can be exposed just by telling one bit of truth?
Yes, I love it, because when you get a liar to trip up over one lie, then suddenly they're like caught in a giant
avalanche.
Yeah, it all comes tumbling down, and then they're sifting through the rubble trying to figure out which lie they're on, and it's all out then, and it's exposed. So I love it. Nothing gets me off greater than that. Yes.
Being a liar is like playing Jenga with your life. Somebody can pull down one little stick and the whole tower comes tumbling.
Yes, well, I've certainly never told lies in anything. You know, I was called a liar millions of times in tweets and blogs and everything else. But no, I've slammed the evidence on the table of everything I've said and done and written and etc. And I'm getting a little tired of this foolishness.
They have a lack of imagination. They don't even have original stuff. Like, basically, I found that what psychopaths and control freaks do is they're so lacking in originality and creativity that the only thing that they can accuse you of is what they are. So if a liar and a pedophile and a scumbag and a psychopath and an FBI informant, for example, didn't like me very much, he'd call me a liar and a psychopath and an FBI informant, wouldn't he?
Yes, sir. Well, we have a phrase for this in Texas, which is the guilty dog barks first. So that's very true, actually.
It's like spreading round information about people. Okay, the thing is, that's technically a crime, isn't it? Libel? Slander? These are things that you can you can't go to jail for them, though. You have to do civil prosecutions, and there's monetary damages that can be.
Well, let's break it down to what it's really called. It's is it worth it to you to go retain counsel if you haven't already, or to invoke that and have even more legal fees and court fees, etc., to go after someone to prove a point? Because I would never go after someone in a lawsuit for money. unless, of course, I was like, you know, almost killed by a falling freight train or something crazy or something. Yeah, but no, to sue to prove a point, I see that as a colossal waste of time, energy, and money. And there's no winners in that, like a divorce, you know.
Apart from the lawyers that you pay in order to garner and broker a 50% divorce settlement, of which each side gets about 10% minus the law fees.
Right.
And I was thinking about this, though, because one person I know who's a really nasty psychopath got sued for civil harassment several times. And civil harassment, I've found that actually the legal definition of it is precisely what a lot of the people who are being stalked by Masons, etc., are describing. And you can indeed sue somebody for that, and you can get them restraining orders, and they can indeed spend time in prison because of it. And sometimes you can just go in and represent yourself, and as long as you've got your ducks in a row, it's not that difficult. But of course, I wouldn't presume to advise you, because of course, guess how many Freemasons are judges?
Well, right, that's why I used to get really offended, actually. I've gotten past it now. It doesn't bother me anymore. But when it was all fresh and happening, and people would say to me, well, why don't you go, you know, get an attorney and sue them? And I would just look at them and go, you're serious, right? You know that there's a judge that has an office in this very fucking building for no reason. He just has an office here because he's Judge so-and-so, and he's that damn powerful that he has an office that he can come hang out in with his young wife that's old enough to be his daughter and, you know, play on the leather sofa. It's just sick. So, no, there was no are you kidding? Did I have legal recourse in the state of Texas? Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Exactly.
I would have been better off to have had everything that happened to me happen in California, where I would have something.
You know, this reminds me of that point in Captain America when they're bringing down, spoiler alert, Captain America the Winter Soldier, when they decide that they actually have to bring down S.H.I.E.L.D., all of it, it all goes, because there's the organization's infested into everything, okay? So the only way to change it is to destroy it, order out of chaos, isn't it? Isn't it funny how the 33rd degree trademark is indeed the very thing that needs to happen in order to destroy Freemasonry and rebuild it again?
Well, that's, you know, inadvertently what's happening, and that's what Fratterer has gone on and on so much about in his career, is the secret war inside Freemasonry, as he's patented the term, and he's absolutely positively correct. But there again, you're dealing with such an umbrella situation, because it's not just Freemasonry, black and white, no pun intended. You've got elements of, let's see here.
It's the most complex frickin' diagram you could have ever conceived of in your mortal life.
Yes, we might as well not waste airtime on it, because it's there's lots. Yeah.
Okay. It's a flow chart that is the size and thickness of a magazine, and you can just keep flipping from one side to the other, and it's only got little points and little arrows and stuff like that that connect almost every single powerful hierarchical organization together at some point, all right? You ever heard about 7 degrees of separation? Everybody is connected to everybody with less than 7 degrees of separation. Someone you know who knows someone you know, blah, 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 down the chain, you are connected to everyone on this planet.
Oh, like living in L.A., you'll be walking down the street in L.A. and you'll run into someone you know from way back in a city of 18 million. It's weird. But yes, you're right.
So, have a little bit of a sense of wonder about you. Have a little faith. Try not to kill yourself, because that doesn't help anybody. It's very, very hard to not do it, because things are often very hopeless. I understand that. I once had these thoughts, but my brother told me that if I ever committed suicide, he wouldn't come to my funeral. He'd come afterwards and piss on my grave for all the pain and suffering I caused everybody. who loved me.
Yes, I've had several suicides in my own family, and I can tell you it's each one was horrendous. You don't do that to your loved ones.
Don't do that to your loved ones, folks. Okay? It doesn't matter how dark things get. The dawn always comes. You've been listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest, James Robert Wright. You can go Google him. And also dialmformason.weebly.com is the website. And we will see you again sometime, folks. Thank you very much for listening.